Welcome to Conversations with David Lewis. Today, horse soldiers. My guest is Doug Stanton. He's written a remarkable book because he's been able to get the inside stories of people who don't usually talk, that is, special operations soldiers and commanders. The book is called Horse Soldiers, the extraordinary story of a band of U.S. soldiers who rode to victory in Afghanistan.
This book is about 12 Americans who secretly leave Fort Campbell, Kentucky in October of 2001 with the mission of collapsing and defeating the Taliban in Afghanistan, the site of the camps that had sponsored the 9/11 attacks.
These are a bunch of special forces guys, special training. They're essentially 12 guys who knock off the Taliban with a little help from American bombs and a lot of Afghan fighters in the what became known as the Northern Alliance, this sort of very rough alliance between a variety of warlords who typically, you know, hate each other.
Exactly. I mean, in the end, they're joined by other teams, but it's really still 300 or so Americans. $70 million in 2 months to do what the Department of Defense thought would take a year. They're outgunned, they're outnumbered, and they're fighting a Taliban ruling class that's been in power, for instance, in a northern city since 1998. So these guys arrive, and they'd never been used before, ever, in the history of the United States as a lead element. I like to tell people that we need to think for a moment about World War II and resistance fighters behind Nazi lines who are fomenting resistance among the locals to overthrow or to harass the Nazis. And in this case, it's the Taliban. So the guerrilla fighters. It's very old-fashioned. It just so happens that they do get on horses. It wasn't planned, but it's the only way for the poor, under-equipped Afghans to have traveled around that part of the world in these amazing charges across the open plain against the Taliban line, which they kept losing, by the way. And this would be a stalemate now, several years old by the time the Americans arrive. You know, it's a bit like the Jetsons meets the Flintstones here, because in the Americans' backpacks are these lasers and radios that can talk to the planes overhead, those planes that provide the air power to prevent the Taliban armor and tanks from reattacking. So it's very much a centuries clashing here, cultures clashing, which is what drew me to the story.
How did you get access to these guys? Because it seems like you got very personal stories from most of that original group of 12, and they're not typically inclined to talk.
Step one was that I wrote a book that came out, the last edition in 2003, called In Harm's Way, about World War II and the sinking of the USS Indianapolis. It was an important story for me as a writer because I was able to tell a story about ordinary people doing something extraordinary. These guys in the water in World War II had to decide if they're going to do the right thing or the wrong thing and how they were going to survive that. That was an interesting story to me. So I told these guys in our present time, the modern soldier and horse soldier, that that's the kind of story I wanted to write. A story of relationships, a story that told their drama, not only of them being at war on horseback, but what was going on with their families, so that the general interest reader would really be able to lean forward in their chair and understand what it meant to leave your home in the middle of the night and get up and do this secret mission, which the whole country was kind of hoping for but really knew nothing about. And so it was that kind of, I think, earnestness on my part and persistence. The book took 6 years, traveled to Afghanistan, maybe 100 interviews, that just finally led them to say, you know what, this guy is he's writing about us in a way that hasn't been done. And the Army got behind it and was very supportive in the end.
So these guys, you know, they jump on a plane in Fort Campbell, Kentucky. Next thing you know, they're at a base in Uzbekistan on the Afghan-Uzbek border. And then they infiltrate into Afghanistan and hook up with various warlords. And you know, for most of them, they're on horses which they've never ridden before. And there are some pretty amusing tales of horses running out of control, extremely sore butts, guys who can't walk afterwards. So let me just say this. What will these guys, these special forces soldiers, remember most from this experience?
I think what they, you know, I've traveled around the country now. The book, I've addressed officers and NCOs at Fort Bragg, at the Special Operations Command, and at Fort Campbell, which is the home of the 5th Special Forces Group, and have been in contact with a lot of them. And here's what, and I say that because what I'm getting back is that what they are still fond of, what still draws them, is the relationships they have with the Afghans, that they were finally able to use their training. You know, they're trained to kind of change the world at the end of a weapon or at the end of an idea. They can wear the diplomat hat, and of course they're also a full-time soldier, but they're very interested in kind of thinking a situation through. They were able to do that in Afghanistan. They really did conjoin with these disparate factions. They pointed them in one direction at the Taliban, and they succeeded. I mean, it was a very classic use of unconventional warfare, of guerrilla fighting.
I'm talking with Doug Stanton, the author of a new book, Horse Soldiers, the extraordinary story of a band of U.S. soldiers who rode to victory in Afghanistan. So they're, you know, they wander in Afghanistan. They're living as Afghans with the people they're going to be fighting with. So that means, you know, they're eating greasy goat. They're trying to buy a mutton that's available, and quite often just not eating at all for days on end. And I love some of the details. For example, you know, as you described the diplomat, the one special forces leader who when he meets the particular warlord, the custom is you take your shoes off when you go into the house, and he had a particular problem with foot odor. Tell that story.
You know, I haven't talked a lot about the great guy named Dean Nosorogue in the book. Incredibly smart. I mean, Dean had worked so hard to train up for this mission. I mean, just as an aside, these guys know more about often the countries they go into than, say, any college professor in the town that they're leaving from. It's very interesting.
And they often speak Arabic, for example, a lot of these guys.
Arabic or Russian, right? So any you know, every skill that you can employ and possess that will keep you alive behind enemy lines when you really have to rely on your wits. So here's Dean, however. He'd done all this planning and training and studying maps, and he just suddenly realized that the whole success of his diplomatic mission, which was building the trust with his warlord, so to speak, could turn on the fact that he has incredibly smelly feet. And he's sitting in the meeting, and Atta, the warlord, the Tajik, who's actually a protege of Massoud, who'd been assassinated.
Shah Massoud.
And Atta looks over, and he kind of sniffs, and he looks around the room, and he's like, he has this horrified look on his face. He's like, oh, no. And the guys on Dean's team just were merciless and kidding him about this problem, and Dean was forever trying foot powders and wearing socks and not wearing socks. But you realize, you know, everything that you do in the battlefield, or anytime you insert yourself into another culture, everything has some kind of collateral effect. And what they're trained be very sensitive are those effects, and to figure out which way they're pushing, you know, the people that they're trying to build rapport with and build trust with. So he noticed that Atta in subsequent meetings did not remove his own shoes, and Dean took that as a sign that he just went on. And he was a great guy. He was very generous to kind of tell me that anecdote.
I'm talking with Doug Stanton, the author of a new book, Horse Soldiers, the extraordinary story of a band of U.S. soldiers who rode to victory in Afghanistan. What are these guys doing now? Some, you said, are in Iraq, maybe. Some went to Iraq. Some died in Iraq, or some are now on their way back to Afghanistan. Some, presumably, are out of the military.
Yeah, right. All of the above. I mean, and so the ones who are still in, right, are still, you know, the fifth group works in the Middle East. It's their language specialty. Listeners may know that each group but across the United States has their own area, geographic area, and it's just that these guys are always going to the Middle East. So, you know, I think what they're hoping for is looking to do. I mean, some of them did some interesting things in Iraq, and I'll tell you, there's a very short story here about Sam Diller. He ends up in Anbar province, and he engineers part of the awakening there. This is after the time frame of Horse Soldiers. So he discovers that unemployment is rampant in the area that they're in. So what he does is create a parallel economy because the Taliban was trying to fill that employment void. And so he said, well, all we have to do is do it better than they are. And he drew the Taliban or the Al-Qaeda fighters, nominal Al-Qaeda fighters, who may be in name only, who are just working for the dollar. You draw them away and you leave the hardcore people behind, and then you can deal with them. But it was, again, an instance where it's an instance of how they work, which is you look at this problem as a social or economic one as much as a kind of tactical one, and then you go to work on it.
Of course, what worked in that very particular time frame in that very particular country with those very particular, you know, internal mm-hmm. politics and sectarian divides and so on, you know, those lessons don't automatically apply to every war. But what are the larger lessons about the success that these horse soldiers had?
No, they certainly don't. I mean, for instance, today, Pakistan and Afghanistan, with that addition of Pakistan kind of now being Afghanistan annexed further to the east, then we have all these border issues and so on, another more complicated matrix. But the fact remains that the template of unconventional war, the way these guys fight it, is that they are very good at coming in. You stop, look, and listen, and you figure out what this other guy on the other side of the line is telling you. You may not agree with it. You may not think he's right. But what you do is you listen and you process and you absorb. And often, and I heard this a lot from this branch of the military, you know what, if someone is telling you point blank and you keep hearing it over and over, you know, this is not going to work, you know, plan A here is not a good one, and they're suggesting plan B. Often in the regular army, that kind of feedback from the host nation is not heeded. And these guys are trained to heed it and pay attention to it, because who better to know what might work and not work than the people who actually live there? The regular army often can look askance at special forces because they do things differently. Not to say that they're involved in rule breaking, but they don't follow normal regular army doctrine. For instance, one of them was telling me, you know, in training, you know, our mission in Iraq was to train the police, not to go after bad guys. I mean, that was the SF perspective on it. Well, if you tell a regular army soldier or some Marines to do that, first time that the police don't do what they tell you they're going to do, in other words, in effect, they lie to you, or they're incompetent, the SF guy is trained to think, okay, this is a process, and this may take a long time. I'm just going to keep pushing ahead, and I'm going to work on this. But what they told me is that often when the regular army confronted with this, they say, well, forget this. This guy lied to me. We're going back to default position, which is blunt force, and we're going to do it our way. Now, I mean, there's a time and place for each of those, but you asked, you know, kind of what they do, what SF does, and it's that other thing, which is to see this as a dynamic process and not so much a non-dynamic.
Diplomacy before warfare as much as possible.
Right, exactly.
Well, Doug Stanton, thank you very much. The book is Horse Soldiers, the Extraordinary Story of a Band of U.S. Soldiers Who Rode to Victory in Afghanistan by Doug Stanton. Thanks again.
Thank you.